Drive Time Radio with New York Vinny.
A very good Saturday morning to you. It is 4th of July weekend. It is Drive Time Radio. I am New York Vinny, and I'm so happy that you are along for the ride with us, Nathan and I, as we go through an hour of automobilia here on our little radio show that we do every Saturday morning from 8 to 9, where we review cars, tell you about things that are happening in the car world, give you some funny stories or stuff like that. Also, a cartoon. I mean, you know, if nothing else out of this whole show, you do get 3 or 4 minutes of a beautiful tune about cars to listen to on a Saturday morning. And I mean, I think that's worth everything you pay for.
Recording in progress.
Thank you. It doesn't start until a lady says that. Everything that you pay for on this show. But thank you so much for being here. I hope you're doing something happy and fun and good and family-like for 4th of July, and that you do it safely. A lot of people not traveling this year or going short distances, even though gasoline has dropped, the price of gasoline, I should say, still, it's prohibiting some people from getting in their car and going places. Although I will say that the AAA expects us to be like one of the biggest automotive weekends ever. So that tells me that there's a lot of cars in the world, and that people are saying, well, you know what? I'll spend a little bit out of the savings account to take my family to Wally World or wherever you're going to take the family this weekend. I mean, the thing here is that the destinations have shortened. So the weekend that you might have taken to go down to what's the big water slide park, going down I-5, not Wild Waves, but that's the one you would go to instead of maybe going all the way down to that that big place down by almost by Centralia there, by the shopping malls and everything, the Grand Lodge or something like that. I've never been in it, but I've seen it. It looks like a lot of fun. It's indoors, which, you know, is perfect for, of course, you got to have an indoor park, but you know, Wild Waves does it outdoors and they do it fine. But that's kind of the difference of what people are doing. Instead of the big long trip over to Spokane to go to an event over there, people may say, you know what, maybe kids, it's time you saw what Soap Lake looks like, or the Grand Coulee Dam, which actually I think is a very cool place to go. On my list of road trips in the state of Washington, which we should really actually do that, is kind of break out the list of I call them the Sunday drives. The trips that you can take in one day. Right now, they would be valuable. Of course, I'm talking about to see things, to go someplace and see something. Or maybe it's instead of a long trip down to Oregon somewhere, it's maybe a shorter trip up to the Chinook Pass or like that, so that you're cutting down on your driving. And I don't know if that's a bad thing or not, to be honest with you. I think you could do worse than having a day where a weekend where you spend less time in a car and more time at a place with your family. But that's personal preference. But the gas prices have dropped a little bit, not a lot. They're still not under $5 here in Seattle, and it's in, I don't know what it is. I saw somebody post something on Facebook, I want to say like yesterday, the day before, and it was down to they posted a thing of 463, and my eyes opened up. And wow, 463. Where are you? And then I leaned in a little closer and noticed that there was, over the gas price sign, there was a sign that said Dunkin' Donuts, and we don't have Dunkin' Donuts up here, which I think is a terrible loss, but we don't have Dunkin' up here. So I knew it was actually someplace back east in, I think, Ohio or something like that. So, you know, I think that's on a lot of people's minds on the traveling this week. Now, of course, if you are coming through Seattle, don't. Do yourself a favor. If you can avoid coming through Seattle on I-5, don't. You know, go some other way. The Department of Transportation, and listen, I know people doing it this weekend. They get the ball game. You have the so many going on in Seattle. And, you know, why would you close I-5 and just move all the traffic over to the collector lanes? But the work needs to be done. Sorry, I have to lubricate a little bit. I have a sore throat. The work has to be done, so they do it. So, usually I get on at Department of Transportation, WASDOT, but listen, they do such a great job. That it's, I think we have to kind of cut them a little bit of slack here. And transportation, you know, it's funny. We have the only baseball park in the country. Let me see if I got this right. I may screw this up, but I'm going to try to get it right. We have the only baseball park in the country that is served by, within like a couple of blocks, bus, light rail, heavy rail, streetcar, and there's another one. But there's five factors that Safeco Field has, excuse me, T-Mobile Park has, that no other ballpark in America has. But yet we fill the parking lots all the time. So, you know, might be the weekend if you are saying, well, I'm going to go to T-Mobile Park. I'm going to catch a Mariners game. They got a day game today. What a beautiful day to go sit in the ballpark. If you're coming from the north, drive your car to Northgate, park it somewhere around there, and jump on the light rail and take it down to the ballpark. It only stops a block or so from the ballpark. It's not a far walk to go over there. And consequently, the other way, if you're coming from the south, you know, park in Federal Way or something like that. And, take public transportation. You can't take it from Federal Way. What's that? The lake just south of the airport.
Angle Lake.
Thank you. Thank you, Nathan. Angle Lake. You can go there, take it from there. And pretty soon you'll be able to take it from the east side. Someday in our lifetime, I believe, they're going to get that thing finished. You'll be taking it from there. And you know what? I love taking public transportation to the ballpark. I really do. I had such great memories of taking a 7 train to Shea Stadium when I was a kid. And everybody on the train would be singing Meet the Mets. And everybody's dressed like you. And, you got the... everybody's going toward a common place, the ballpark, and sharing. I mean, it's kind of hokey, I guess, but you're having that shared experience with other people. And I know today's a little different. Maybe you don't talk to people on public transportation. Maybe you leave the guy over in the corner alone that's deciding to smoke his fentanyl or whatever it is that they're smoking on the trains these days. But I believe they put extra security on those trains. And if somebody's acting out of order, they're gone in pretty good order. So that's an idea to think about. If you're coming into Seattle today, you're going to come in downtown. You're going to the ballpark, to the museum, the waterfront, anything like that. Take public transportation because I-5 is going to be a mess. And it really is, you know, you take 405, but that gets jammed up because everybody else is taking 405 to go around because it's a whole, go north. Go, you know what? Go see your cousins in Canada. By the way, happy Canada Day to all our friends in Canada. My former producer, Jeremy Grader, now lives up in Canada with his lovely wife and children. And for Canada Day, they took a trip to the United States. Hey, you know, what are you going to do? Sometimes you get homesick. But they've been up there and they enjoy it. And I love going to Canada. I haven't been in a while because of COVID. But, you know, it's a nice nice place to go and to hang out and you know, and enjoy yourself. But I digress. As my sister would say, we are talking about it is a uniquely American holiday, 4th of July, an Independence Day. We need to keep that name in mind. Independence is what we celebrate today, and hopefully the fact that we will never lose that. And part of that, such a big part of the story of this country's independence, is the automobile. And I think on some levels, there are people who are afraid, fearful, wondering what the future of automobiles, because they're going to be electric. There's a lot of talk about them being autonomous, that you won't, that you'll get into a car and you won't have control. You'll have control. You'll set a destination, but you won't have control. You know, it'll drive itself and you won't. And you're sitting there and you know, doing, I don't know, whatever it is you're doing on your way to work. And it's going to take away a piece of that independent spirit that allowed you for so many years to get in your car and drive west or drive east and go out and see things that maybe you wouldn't have seen before. Or instead of flying over, you drive through and you see things, and it makes you feel like you have that streak that the pioneers had in them, where they could get in their covered wagons and, you know, go out west and discover things and make new lives for themselves. I think the car and automotive does that for you and gives you that kind of feeling. You know, if you're stuck in your apartment in the city, maybe not, but still the option is there. You get in that thing, you fill it up with gasoline, and you go. And when you run out of gas, you fill it up with more gasoline and you go. And that's the American independence story in the 20th century. And now we'll have to see how it changes in the first 22 years of the 21st century have been interesting in automotive. I think we're in a time, as I say often, really parallels back to where we were in the early 1900s, when there were a ton of car makers around and the gasoline engine was new and people were struggling to figure out, is it going to be gasoline? Is it going to be diesel? Is it going to be grain alcohol? Which they preferred down south, I understand, and in parts of Puyallup. And you know, all of the things that had to be figured out, sorted out, so we could make our automobiles, our newfound mobility, work for the largest amount of people. That was the idea. And of course, who could make a buck at it? You know, the oil companies are sitting, you know, John D. Rockefeller with Standard Oil wasn't saying, you know, gee, I want to find what's best for people. He was saying, I want to find out what's going to make me the most money. I could sell kerosene for lamps to people, but you know, this guy Edison and this other guy, Tesla and Westinghouse, General Electric, they're coming up with all this electric stuff. That's not going to be good for me and my lamp oil. So I better figure out another thing to do with the oil. And so therefore you had gasoline, which was a throwaway product from oil. It was something that they threw away because it was too flammable. But as you learn, if you, you know, if you believe in love, somewhere there's a someone for everyone. And gasoline was the perfect someone for the internal combustion engine. They matched up, boom, and you have the automobile and all that goes with it. A couple other things that are going on. I know a lot of people this weekend taking their cars out and going to go in the parking lot, you know, because the parking lot is a very American tradition. Nowhere else in this world do we use so much of a percentage of space in our country to put cars, store cars. Most countries, you look around and it's not that percentage of land dedicated to parking automobiles. I don't know where they put them, but they don't put them in huge parking lots in most places. There are exceptions, of course. Probably Australia. You got a lot of land you're not using in Australia. Quickly, we'll go through this. I was talking about the top 10 parking lots in America. Let me just give you the top five. Because I think it's an interesting thing, especially on this day where we're all going to be going to parking, looking for parking. But the top five capacity parking lots in America. NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas is number five. This one shocked me a little bit. MetLife Stadium in the America Dream Mall in Meadowlands, New Jersey. The Bristol Motor Speedway in Bristol, Tennessee. That thing is huge. And they're not even counting all the camping places that are around it. The Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California is the number two. And Nathan, do you want to guess where the largest parking lot in America is?
Largest parking lot. So not parking garage, or is it including parking garages?
No, not garages, just the parking lot.
Not garage.
No parking structure.
I'm going to have to say, oh, that's a good one. Probably somewhere in the Salt Flats?
Well, you're kind of in the neighborhood. Not exactly, but you're kind of in the neighborhood. How about State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona? Not too far from Peoria. If you go up the 101 there, the Loop 101, you pass it all the time. It's where the Cardinals play. And there's a few other facilities there in between the Cardinals. And they have a outlet mall thing going on there and a bunch of other stuff. But the parking lot holds the most capacity, has the largest capacity in America. You know, believe it or not, the largest parking structure in America is at SeaTac Airport. From what I've researched, it's at SeaTac Airport, so that's kind of interesting. All right, Nathan, while I got you, do you want to ask me a question?
Yo, Vinny, what are you driving this week?
Oh, yes, I'm driving. Oh, I can't believe I'm, you know, what am I driving this week? Took me a second, but I am driving a Genesis G80 Sport. So that's the sports sedan from Genesis. Now, I've been impressed with all of the Genesis cars that I have driven. And anything that comes from, matter of fact, I'm pretty impressed with almost anything that comes from Hyundai or Kia, for that matter, you know, both really the same company. But just an incredible vehicle, luxury vehicle. I mean, from soup to nuts, from the egress to into the car, out of the car, the styling touches, the class that the car is put together with, the materials that are used, all of the stuff that you look for when you spend, you know, it's not like a $100,000 luxury car, but it feels like it's worth a lot more than the $72,000 that it costs. And the interesting thing about this car is it has, we're talking about parking lots before, This thing has the four-wheel steering. So, you know, when you're trying to get into a tight space, the rear wheels will, you know, steer into the space. And it's pretty cool. Except the only problem is, you know, you're trying to look for the rear wheels moving, and you can't really see it. They don't turn so much that, you know, the end of the wheel, the tire sticking out of the fender well or anything. But I'm going to, over the next couple of days, set up my camera so that we can actually watch the wheels, the rear wheels move. It won't do or at least I haven't tried to do the crab walk yet, like the Hummer does. You know, the new electric Hummer, where you can move it, you know, like you can almost do like a little boogie with it. Not quite there yet, but we'll see as it progresses. But it's a beautiful car, as I said, around $72,000. I've enjoyed it immensely so far, and it's really you know, if you're in the market for that type of car, it is certainly a car that you should put on your list, I would think. And we'll have the full review next week and a full review of the car that we had last week, the Audi A6 All-Road Quattro, coming up a little bit later in the show.
He's excited because he just saw the new Ford Falcon.
Well, everyone who has seen the 1961 Falcon is excited.
But I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, I don't believe we've met.
Excuse me, Pigpen.
Hello, Pigpen.
I'm very glad to know you.
Well, since Pigpen hasn't seen the Falcon yet, let's show it to him right now. This year, the Falcon gives you more power, more luxury, more comfort for six people, more of everything that has made it the world's most successful new car.
It must be pretty embarrassing for the other compact cars to realize how they missed the boat.
And you can now select from two engines, the regular Falcon engine, famous for mileage, and the new, more powerful Falcon 170 Special.
You get a choice of engines?
That's right.
You have to admire the generosity.
You also have to admire the Falcon's economy. It goes up to 30 miles on a gallon of gasoline.
30 miles is quite a distance.
Especially when you compare it with what the others give you.
And it goes 4,000 miles between oil changes.
4,000 miles?
That's virtually beyond comprehension.
Oh, and that reminds me, the Falcon's Diamond Luster finish never needs waxing. And yet, with all these exclusive features, the Falcon is still low, low in price. No other compact car offers this all-around economy.
I must say, I'm very impressed. I'm sure the 61 Falcon will rank high in favor with the buying public.
Thank you. Now you know why everyone's excited about the Falcon.
Me too.
The 1961 Falcon. The car no other compact can measure up to.
This overheated radiator shouldn't have happened. Or this street windshield in the rain. Or this dead battery here. Shouldn't somebody check those things for you every time?
Your Texaco dealer does. That's his promise. Your Texaco dealer not only promises to check the things everyone ought to, he'll double-check, too. He'll check your battery. Double-check the battery cables. Check your oil. Double-check the fan belt. Check your radiator. Double-check the radiator cap. Clean your windshield. And double-check the wiper blades. What's more, your Texaco dealer's service and courtesy includes a smile and a thank you. That's his promise.
You can trust your car to the man who wears the star. The big, bright Texaco star.
Get inspired every hour right here on Alternative Talk 1150.
I'm back with you on Drive Time Radio here on a 4th of July weekend, Saturday morning. Calm down if you're out there. I know the collector lanes are kind of all screwed up and I-5 going. So I don't know why WASDOT decides to always fix I-5 on 4th of July weekend when the Mariners are in town, when there's all this stuff going on. They figure that that's the best time to close the freeway. Go figure. I'm sure somebody will be able to explain it to me someday. Anyway, if you're going down that way, be careful. Use an alternate route. Use 99. Go around 405. Do what you got to do. All right, we get a chance now to spend a few minutes with a good friend and one of the preeminent automotive journalists in America, I would say. I'm going to give you that title. Is that okay, Jill Simonello?
I will totally take it. I don't know that I've earned it yet, but I'll take it anyway.
Hey, listen, this is America. You don't have to earn it before you take it these days.
Right.
Pickup truck and SUV talk. She is the managing editor. Also, a new title recently added. One of the judges of the North American Car of the Year, or NACTOY. Congratulations, Jill. That's in our business and what we do. That's quite an honor.
You know, it really is. I'm incredibly honored and humbled to have been elected to the jury. There are 50 automotive journalists in Canada and the United States that make the jury, and somebody has to resign or leave the jury to be able to put somebody else on. So Frank Okafor, who is a longtime juror, just retired this year, and that opened up a spot, and I was elected in.
Awesome, awesome. And just for people in North America that aren't familiar with the North American Car of the Year, the judging starts toward the end of the year, if I'm not mistaken, and then you usually have it ready for the Detroit Auto Show, but that show has moved, so it now stands kind of on itself, right, individually.
Yeah. So typically what happens is at the beginning of every year, the board goes through and they find like every significantly redesigned, updated vehicle, like cars, utility vehicles, and trucks for a specific model year. And so they prepare a list, and I want to say it's probably like between 45 and 50 vehicles every year. And then, you know, the jurors try to drive and evaluate the vehicles. And then I feel like, and I'm new, so it literally just this week elected. So I'm still wrapping my mind around the processes and things like that. But I believe like starting in September, there's like a first round of voting, and then you go through a second round of voting, and then there's like a third round of voting, but they kind of whittle it down until you get like three finalists in each category. And then in January, I believe it's going to be like January 11th. There's an announcement that happens, and it did used to be like the first press conference of the first media day on, you know, at the Detroit Auto Show. But since the Detroit Auto Show is no more, they are, in fact, doing a standalone announcement that is not tied to the show.
Well, good luck with that. Congratulations again. I don't think they could have made a better choice, but that's just because I like you. I'm sure there's a few other people in the business going, oh, why don't they ever pick me for this? I heard there's free food if this thing, you know.
I don't know that there's any free food involved, but I'll probably, you know, for me, I bring a lot of RX bars and things like that to events. So
I'll send you a couple box of Twinkies. How's that?
I don't know that I would eat the Twinkies, but I'll give them to my husband. How's that?
Yeah, you give it to somebody. All right, let's move over to talk a little bit about, there's a lot of action going on in the pickup truck world. And of course, it's July 4th. Pickup trucks are so uniquely American. I mean, it's our gift to the rest of the world right now. And we sell more pickup trucks in this country than cars now. And cars seem to be fading. You know, somewhere, somehow, it's either an SUV or a pickup truck. Sedans are far and few between. Let's start out with some of the smaller trucks that we're seeing. It seems that earlier in the week, Chevy put out some faded shots of their new Colorado. And all of a sudden, like 15 minutes later, Ford had some spy shots of their Ranger. Am I correct in that kind of back and forth thing? And I know you saw both. Anything impress you about either of these trucks?
Yeah, well, so, you know, Chevrolet, I think, purposely released, obviously, the teaser, and it's for the 2023 Colorado ZR2. And they're actually going to do a full review of this vehicle on July 28th. So, 28 days away now. We are, you know, in July. So 27, 28 days away. And they are going to do a full review of the Colorado ZR2. So the Colorado ZR2 already exists in the lineup, but this is going to be next gen, all new. And, you know, in the shot, like it really was kind of blurry and fuzzy. And then they had like a 15-second video that they teased, and you kind of freeze frame and you look and you're like, okay, see how the headlights are different. You freeze frame on the back and you're like, okay, I see the taillights are different. And so, I mean, you did get a glimpse of, you know, some of the design changes. You see the interior is like very much from the like hands on the steering wheel shot. It looks like there's some updates and tech that are going to happen. But the thing is you look at the new refreshed Silverado for this year. So they released a refreshed version for 2022 of the big boy pickup truck in the Chevy lineup. And so you can kind of extrapolate a little bit of what you think is going to happen. And so I envision like bigger screen, you know, it's 2022. Of course, there's going to be a bigger infotainment screen, but I think they'll probably go with the Google powered operating system, because that's what the new Silverado has. So you'll start to see Google Maps and Google Assistant. You can ask Google to tell you a joke in the truck while you're driving. It's kind of fun. Believe me, every time I get into a vehicle with a Google powered operating system, so Volvo now has it, and then the Chevy Silverado, the GMC Hummer, and the GMC Sierra, they all have the updated versions, all have the, and I'm like, Google, tell me a joke. And they come up with some really lame jokes, but they're hilarious. And the GM version, it actually does the ba-dum-bump, like the, you know, and so it's just, I don't know, it's the little things that amuse me. And I could see a really big kick out of it, like when you're taking a road trip this weekend. Yeah. But no, I've been having a lot of fun with it. But so I think we'll see that. And just so some of the tech and the design that we saw in the refreshed.
More trucky? Will the new Colorado be more trucky? Because, you know, there's a lot of criticism about the old one. It kind of looked like half an SUV, half of this, half of that. I don't know that I believe that. I like the Colorado. I mean, I didn't, it's not the Tacoma, but it's okay. It's not a bad truck. It's a decent truck. But it seems like they want to He-Man it up a little bit.
I definitely think it'll be a lucky, and I think that it's a very purposeful move that they are revealing the ZR2 first, which is going to be the brawniest version of the truck, and you know, the most off-road capable version. And so I think it'll be more trucky. I think that's the trend we're seeing. You know, with the Nissan Frontier just relaunched, I think it was for the 2022 model year, as we saw it at the Chicago Auto Show last year. And that was definitely a much more trucky, beefed up version. It looks, you know, much more aggressive. So I definitely think that's where they're going with the midsize trucks. And we're going to be seeing the Toyota Tacoma coming up soon. And as you alluded to, we saw some spy shots that were released this week of the Ford Ranger. And keeping in mind, the Ford Ranger has already been revealed globally. So we've already seen unmasked versions of this truck. And they're really not going to change it too much, I don't think. I mean, obviously, they're going to put the steering wheel on the other side of the vehicle, because the pictures we've all seen.
It looks like it has maybe, you know, a little bit more.
Yeah, well, so the spy shots that we saw this week actually had either an extended cab or a crew cab version with a long pickup bed. And I won't say long, it's more of a standard bed, so like in the 6-foot range. And that's unique and that's different for the truck. And it's funny, we were having some arguments looking at the spy shot. So, you know, if you're not familiar with the spy shot, if you're listening, typically what they do is they put this funky black and white camouflage all over the vehicle. So you have a really hard time trying to pick out bumps or nuances, fender flares, that kind of stuff. And on this vehicle, to me, it looks like it's going to be a crew cab, but the spy photographer called it an extended cab. So a crew cab is 4 full doors, whereas an extended cab is like a front door with kind of like a half short door in the back. But I think it looked like a crew cab with a standard bed. And if so, like that's a new configuration for that truck. And that would be very interesting.
And with the Maverick in the mix, you know, they've sold all that they can print. Does that push them a little bit more for the Ranger, or is the Maverick buyer turning out to be something different than somebody that would buy a Ranger?
You know, I think that somebody who's buying the Maverick is different than a person who's buying the Ranger, because, I mean, a Ranger still it doesn't compete with a full-size truck. I want to be clear there, but it's more truck-like. It does more truck-like things, even though it's more of a lifestyle vehicle. Whereas I think what the target was for Maverick, don't have the data to back it up, but I would anticipate this is what's happening, is somebody who would have bought a sedan, you know, is now perhaps buying the Maverick, you know, a city dweller, you know, somebody who wants, you know, more of a sedan style vehicle, but likes the functionality of that open bed. I think that's who you're seeing that is buying something like a Santa Cruz or a Ford Maverick. Rather than, you know, somebody who wants a pickup truck is buying a Maverick. But I mean, also seeing the flip side too, you know, somebody who maybe had a full-size pickup truck, liked a full-size pickup truck, but doesn't need the full-size pickup truck anymore, might also opt for this. But it's just a very interesting dynamic that we're seeing, because there are some old school truck guys are like, that's not a truck and I would never buy that. But then you're seeing some of the people who are feeling like the nostalgia, because when you look at the old full size trucks, they were more mid-sized back in the day. Like the full size trucks today are behemoth.
Yeah, it's a truck to me. I mean, you know, I look at it, geez, I mean, it looks like a truck, you know, and it smells like a truck, you get in it. But I like the fact that it's stripped down a little bit. It doesn't have all of the amenities. It's got a plastic. I don't even know if it's plastic. It's more like recycled material interior. I mean, there was a lot of cool things about the Maverick that I liked. Let's talk about Ford a little bit. Jill Simonillo, managing editor of Pickup Truck and SUV Talk, is with us here on Drive Time Radio. The Lightning is hitting the streets. Mm-hmm. And what's the early... consensus on the Lightning? I'm hearing a lot of good stuff here.
Well, funny, because I'm hearing a lot of good stuff too. So the media who've driven it, we were all very impressed with the vehicle. And it's funny because they brought the Lightning to the Midwest Automotive Media Association Spring Rally. So this is a big event we have every year in May. It's in Wisconsin. And there's usually anywhere between 80 and 100 vehicles that manufacturers bring for journalists to come and drive and test. And so that vehicle was there. And my boss at Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, Tim Estradahl, was there with me. And we took a drive in the Ford F-150 Lightning. And we did a video. I'll have to send you the link, because it's actually kind of funny. It's basically me and Tim arguing back and forth about the viability of this truck. And he's like, truck guys are never going to buy it. And I'm like, why aren't they going to buy it? And he's like, well, it's not really a truck. And I'm like, why isn't it a truck? But like, we're just like going back and forth. He's like, well, I think it's a great truck, but it doesn't do truck things. I'm like, does it tow? And he's like, well, yes, it tows. And I'm like, does it haul things? He's like, yes, it hauls things. I'm like, what truck things is it not going to do? So, I mean, it was kind of a funny video, but I think that the point like he was trying to make is the range anxiety for that vehicle is very real, because people who own a truck are very likely going to want to tow long distances. So we're not talking about towing in town. And if you tow long distances, you're looking at probably 100 miles of range in towing. And so that means you have to stop and charge every 100 miles. Well, okay, are there going to be chargers every 100 miles? If there's a charger every 100 miles, are you going to be able to pull in to the charge, have to detach your trailer and then pull in to charge? So it just, there's a whole new set of problems that open up when you look at a full-size pickup truck that does truck things and charging long distances. And so that, I think, was the point that he was trying to make, more than, you know, it's not really a truck that, you know, but we had a very interesting back and forth argument.
Yeah, please send me that link. We'll put it in the show notes. Do you see that? And this is something I believe is going to happen, but who knows? You're a lot closer to it than I am. Do you see that Ford will install software changes in these vehicles that will eventually give these vehicles more life, or as you buy it is what you're going to get? And until you go buy like a 2028 or 29, that's where you'll get the better range.
Well, so I think we're limited now by batteries. And I'll be honest, like I'm just starting to dig into the EV world. And this is just, you know, it's still relatively new to me. But I think that we are limited by the battery technology that we have right now. So I don't think that's going to be an over-the-air update where it's like, bam, overnight you have more range. What I think is going to happen, and Ford is actually kind of leading the way in this, is I think that you're going to have better charging infrastructure. And so one of the things that Ford is doing is in their Ford Pass app, for people who are EV owners, if you go to a charging station and you charge, they really want you to give feedback on that charging station. Was it operable? Was the information that you got on the app accurate? You know, that it was available or not available? You know, did it charge, like if it's a 150 kilowatt charger, did it charge it at that rate or did it charge it something less than that? And so then Ford wants to hold the charging companies accountable and say, hey, by the way, either you fix this charging station or we're going to remove it from our app and come and use it anymore. And so I think Ford is really trying to make an effort to fix the infrastructure, make the infrastructure usable, better, more reliable, and more accurate. And that, I think, will negate the need for more range. This, and again, this is just totally my opinion.
They have to fix the infrastructure. I mean, yeah. There's no doubt. And again, you know, I liken it to not that I was here for this, but in the early 20th century when they were building gas stations. You know, I think we're at that same point in automotive. Right. In a couple of seconds we have left, let's talk about Rivian. Would you buy a Lightning or would you buy a Rivian pickup?
So that's a tough one. I haven't driven the Rivian, but it looks really cool, and I've managed to climb into the gear tunnel once or twice. But I would have to go with Ford right now, just because of the reliability. You know, to me, buying a vehicle that is from a manufacturer that knows how to manufacture vehicles and has supply chain. I mean, we all have supply chain issues right now, but has like the history of the supply chain backing them up. And, you know, they have this background and the infrastructure in building vehicles, whereas Rivian is just getting started. And for me, like not having infinite amounts of money, you know, not being like, I'm an early adapter, but I'm like, I can't gamble that kind of money on a vehicle. Like I would want
I'm paying $90,000 for a truck. Yeah. I mean, I want to be able to take it down a corner and get whatever it needs done
and go to the dealership that's right down the corner. And so for me, that I need the assurance. I need the, you know, I need that lifeline. But you know, I think Rivian's a great vehicle. I think they're going to do interesting things. I think they're an interesting disruptor. I look forward to following them.
One more quick question before we let you go. Ram, huh? I mean, are you just sitting back and looking at all of this, or is there anything? Because I know I got a lot of Dodge fans, Ram fans that listen to the show and are saying, what the heck is going on with Ram? And we see talk about this, talk about that, but nothing solid coming out yet.
No, I mean, there is nothing solid coming out, but we do know, Stellantis, which is the parent company for Ram, did a kind of like an EV day about a year ago. I think it's pretty much a year ago, almost exactly, because I feel like they did it in July of last year. And there were some interesting announcements that came out of that, in that they had basically announced that they're moving towards an electrified strategy pretty much across the board. And they did state that they are going to be having an electric pickup truck, but they didn't necessarily say when. But we have assume it's got to be by the 24-25 model year. And right now, if you go to ramtrucks.com, I think you can probably find the link there. It's been a while since I've looked at it, but they are basically, they want user feedback. And so they're encouraging people to go to the website and asking them, what do you want in an electric truck? And so right now, I think they're still in the information gathering stage. I think they are looking at Rivian, what Rivian has done. I think they're looking at the success that Ford has had. I think they're going to be eagerly watching what the Silverado EV does, the Chevy Silverado EV. And then I think they're just going to take user feedback and the feedback and the data that they've managed to gather from the people who've already done it. And then my hope, fingers crossed, is that they will build something even better than what's already out there.
Sit back and get it right, yeah, as opposed to sit back and experiment. Because let's face it, they probably don't have the same kind of financial wherewithal that GM or Ford, especially Ford. I mean, those companies are doing good right now. Ram is, and Dodge and Jeep, maybe not so much. So they have to be a little bit, probably a little bit more cautious in, right, in what they do, which way they go. So it's better that they sit back, and they're fiercely loyal owners. I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's really, don't say anything bad about their trucks. They'll chase you.
All truck owners are very fiercely loyal, by the way. That is what I've discovered. And you will have a very hard time converting a Chevy to a Ram or a Ford to a, you know, Ram Ram to a, I mean, they are all like, I'm a Ford guy, I'm a Ram guy, I'm a Chevy guy, and that's it.
It's your grandfather's truck, man. I mean, he drove, you drove. It's fascinating. Jill, it's good to catch up with you. I really appreciate you jumping on with us for a few minutes. Hopefully we'll get you back again sooner than we have. I know it's been a while, but we'll get rolling again because there's so much happening in the world of trucks and cars and everything, especially trucks. Congratulations again on your NACTOY judge election. As I said before, they couldn't have got a better person. And if you want to find out more about Jill, she's got a podcast. She does a podcast along with everybody else at Pickup Truck and SUV Talk. And I think, what's the other one you're on? It's Car?
Consumer Guide Car Stuff.
Right, with Tom, right?
Tom Appel and Damon Bell. Yep.
Yeah. So she's all over the place. I'm all over the place. And we're all over the place. And that's why we hang out in cars, right? Because we're all over the place when we have to. Jill, have a happy 4th of July. Thank you very much. You stick around. We'll be right back with our Saturday morning cartoon. It's a 4th of July weekend edition of Drive Time Radio right here on 1150 KKNW.
And since we're running short on time, let's just go ahead and get ready for the cartoon right now. Okay, Vinny?
Okie dokie, let's do that. The cartoon, as you have it, is from Annie. She is a Nordic artist, which, believe you me, I never knew that there was a website dedicated to Nordic music, but there is. I found it, found the car. The name of this one is American Cars, and it is from Annie. There you go. There is Annie from Norway. Anne Lilia Berge Strand is her full name. And she was a very popular Norwegian singer many years ago and had some hits over there and actually did some movie soundtracks and so on and so forth, and decided after 11 years of not putting out any music to put an album out in 2020, I believe this was, and decided to write a song about American cars, which in Europe is like a status symbol. You know, when you drive a Challenger, especially a high performance American car, which there's so many of them that have been sent over there. And it's amazing to see the love and the status and the way that that American cars, especially as I say, muscle cars and so on and so forth, are revered over there. I mean, it's clubs. You know, there's not a lot of great places to drive them in the urban areas, but you get out onto the roads and in the country and so on and so forth. And you can open up a little bit in them, and they're a lot of fun. And, you know, if you're a young man driving a 69 Camaro Z28 in Norway, you're probably a pretty popular young man or woman. Either way, you're, you know, the car, the muscle car, brings you that that kind of status. And they're expensive and very expensive to maintain over there, because you got to do a lot of this stuff yourself. I don't know if there's a lot of places, you know, here you can find a foreign car place on every corner, but foreign cars are popular here. Over there, not so much for American cars, which an American car is a foreign car over there. Right? I got that right, Nathan? American car, foreign car over there. Anyway, great cartoon, Saturday morning cartoon for your enjoyment. Nathan, before we go, I know we only got a couple of seconds left here, but I did want to check in with you. And what are you doing this weekend, Nathan?
Oh, let's see. Probably going to be going for a drive. I got, you know, since my car is currently in the shop, got a bit of a more American type vehicle and really, really good to take out on the 4th of July, I must say.
Yeah, yeah. You should get yourself a red, white, and blue shirt and get out there and hang out with the muscle car crowd.
And then fireworks and hot dogs.
That's my man, Nathan. I appreciate you, Nathan, as they like to say. I appreciate you. All right. Well, that'll pretty much put it in the books for another edition of Drive Time. We'll do the road test next week. I wanted to make sure we got the song in, and I wanted to make sure we had a couple of seconds here to, number one, wish my beautiful daughter, who is born on the 4th of July, a very happy birthday. She turns 30. And believe you me, I can't believe it, but she's the light of my life. And I couldn't think of a better daughter to have than my little girl, Erin, who is now not such a little girl anymore. And, of course, a happy and safe 4th of July to all of you out there. We always appreciate you listening to the show and to spending time with Nathan and I on a Saturday morning. Thanks so much for that. We will be back next Saturday morning, 8 o'clock, if the Lord's willing, and the creek don't rise, right here on Drive Time Radio at 1150 KKNW. Have a safe 4th.